Hi, I'm Owen.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Dead Wargamer Society.
All right, so for this episode, I'm super excited because we have a bunch of firsts for our podcast. We have our first episode with more than one guest. We have our first episode that's not a boys club episode, and it is going to be our first episode where we're not looking at a dead war game, but a resurrected war game. So lots of excitement. With us today, we have Greg and Alicia, who are the owners of Dust USA. They distribute the products from the Dust universe in the US. A lot of you guys are going to know them if you've been to any convention, because they have the big, awesome booth, usually with a floating airplane above it. Lots of little like ghillie and military-esque hangings on in their area. And usually a lot of people just doing demos right in the booth itself. So you've definitely seen it if you've been to a con. For Greg's history, he has had previous experience as what I call a press ganger wrangler, which I'm sure isn't the right terminology. He's been in the industry since 2005, working with Rackham and importing D&D, I guess that's Edition 4?
Yes,
right, Greg? Yep. Terrific. And working with Monsterpocalypse, which was the old school privateer press Monpoc in France. Alicia has a awesome Facebook page of her own.
We see no gaming experience whatsoever.
That's definitely not true, because I've seen you play games.
And, I do. I'm extremely selective.
Yes. And I would definitely suggest her page just for the food pictures and the home remodeling, which is incredibly impressive. So
Pornis makes you great.
Fair. Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that kind of covers most of it. Was there anything you guys wanted to add?
No, that pretty much covers up everything. So hello, everyone.
Wonderful. So we usually just kind of kick it off with has there been anything that you guys have been hobbying on in the past, couple weeks? So Greg and Alicia, have you done any pandemic hobbying recently?
Well, we just came out from the garden where we were putting our garden to bed, basically, and harvesting horseradish, which I have no idea how to do, but we're going to find out the hard way. A lot of crying probably in our future.
Yes.
Greg has been staying with stuff in the industry by having a weekly painting session with his friends. And then about two weekends a month, we go to our local game store, which for us is Toledo Game Room. And we go there for just about the length of one game, just because we're not super comfortable, because we're isolating, but we're really trying to show that we care by going out. So doing things like that, that's probably all it is. Most of our actual activities at home have really been just trying to maintain things, as I think a lot of people are right now, just trying to keep up with what's going on and try to stay ahead of any problems that might happen in these trying times.
Yeah.
Everything else for us is on hold convention-wise, and there's really absolutely nothing for us to do. Marketing, yeah. We do a little marketing.
No, yeah, we have. If we're talking about hobby as a hobby, it's Sunday paint day. It's going one Friday, every other Friday, to the game room and play with the boys, and that's pretty much all.
But shout out to Josh, he's amazing.
Yeah, Monkey, he's doing a great job. But yeah, it's so that's pretty much all. But yeah, during the isolation, all these little things have been really helping. So that's pretty cool.
We hate to say it, but we're kind of happy to be home, because we're never home in our real life. Yeah. We're traveling two weekends out of the month, and it's a rarity.
Three weekends out of the month.
Yeah, I was being generous.
No, it's really it has been bad. 2019, we were out of 52 weekends, we were out 45.
So basically, the pandemic has brought us back to all the time that we missed with our family.
Yeah.
Back in one year. So the kids are thrilled. Just thrilled.
That's excellent. So I know that you mentioned the kind of digital painting with friends thing. Greg, mm-hmm. what have you been painting during those sessions?
I've been painting quite a bit of everything, but mainly I've been experimenting with TurboDork paints, which I fell in love with. So I've been putting them up on absolutely everything.
You started with some dust minis.
Yeah, I actually did an entire IGN list that I have for when we can go back to play a little bit more. But now
he's caught up in nostalgia, so he's painting Star Wars.
Yep, Star Wars Legion a lot.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. I mean, the miniatures are going from ugly potato to okay, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's still Star Wars, so it's fine.
Well, with the cutoff from China and things being hard for us to get, it's kind of a hard justification for us to start painting our own miniatures when we mm-hmm. could be giving them to somebody else.
Yeah,
that's awesome. How about you, Owen? Any hobbying?
Yeah, I finished up some Relic Blade stuff and started on some Dark Age stuff. And speaking of painting during the pandemic, we're actually running a painting, I wouldn't call it a competition, but a painting event on the Facebook Dark Age group, Sumeria Reborn. So we have an opportunity to win some prizes. We've been really lucky that Battlefront has volunteered to give us some stuff to give away. So if you're interested, unfortunately for the Battlefront stuff will probably be already given away by the time this episode airs, but I'm actually giving out some stuff from my own personal stash to people that just submit any painted Dark Age stuff. So if you're interested, head over to the Dark Age Facebook group and check out the St. Nicholas painting contest.
Cool.
How about you, Chris?
So since the last time we podcasted, I did actually finish up my first few Dust IJN models. So my Foot Clan Ninjas and Sailor Moon Command Squad for the cadets, I'm happy with.
They're really cool. I've seen them online. They are really, really nice.
Thank you. So I'm excited moving forward to kind of keep going with that. I don't know much about Sailor Moon, so I'm mainly relying on my fiance to kind of pick out the character colors for each squad.
Nice.
And I feel like I did something else. Oh, yeah, you told me to play Mythos, so I got some Mythos models, and I've been painting those.
Nice.
Excellent choice.
Actually, Mythos is a game, not Mythos the faction for Dust. There's too many local Mythos players. I don't want to crowd their area. Yes. But Mythos is a new War Cradle game that recently came out that's very much like Elder One's...
Oh, yeah. I saw that, yeah.
Cults and such, yeah. So giving it a shot. Figured, you know, a starter is not too difficult to invest in. Anywho, moving along to our main topic, which is Dust and the wide world of Dust. I'll let Owen take it away with kind of the short game summary.
Alrighty, so Dust is a pulp Weird War universe created by Paolo Parente. Paolo created a few different products in the universe, namely a comic and then some larger scale figures. But the first gaming product set in the Dust universe was a game called Dust Tactics, which was something of a hybrid between a board game and a war game, played on a grid, which is something that Dust 1947 has kept. Also, some rules were released for a more traditional war game with distance measurements a little bit later, co-written by Andy Chambers. The original Dust Tactics was released in 2010. There were a lot of other products that were also released in the Dust universe. There's an RPG, some collectible figures, and over time, games have come and gone. Dust Tactics and Dust Warfare, unfortunately, are no longer supported. However, Dust 1947 brought the Dust universe back to the tabletop in 2016. Dust 1947 is a tabletop game using 1/48 scale miniatures, rules for either playing on a grid or using a standard tabletop measurement system. I'd say it's a company scale army force, and it uses a custom type of D6. Greg and Alicia, did I miss anything there or miss say anything there?
No, it's perfect.
I don't think so.
Great. Whew, yeah. Okay. So Alicia and Greg, do you want to give us like a quick, elevator pitch summary of what the Dust universe is about?
Greg is nudging me. No.
The Dust universe, you're in 1947 and the Second World War is not finished. Hitler got killed in 41 or 42. as actually assassinated by one of his own snipers that history will reveal later. It's Angela, which is actually a very important character of the Dust universe. But the purge happened, and the Axis is now in the hands of the Wehrmacht and the regular army, basically, of Germany, with a few allies, obviously. And they have found this weird technology and source of energy called the VK, the Vril Kultur, that actually changed the face of war. It's from an alien origin. They found it in Antarctica because they actually captured an alien and their ship and managed to... And the fun part of it is that now the Axis are actually the good guys because they are trying to convince everyone that the aliens are coming back to destroy everyone. Because this alien, when they got interrogated a little forcefully by the Bloodcruits, told them that they had awakened something that shouldn't have been awakened, and for that they will perish. And this something is actually Cthulhu and his friends. So, because the Vrils are actually this kind of super guardians of the galaxy, and Cthulhu, Nyarlathotep, and all the great old ones are actually extraterrestrial entities that are trying to destroy the whole universe. So, obviously, they're not friendly. So yeah, you are now at the moment of Paradise Lost. You're at the end of the year 1947, and it's a hot mess. The cultists of the mythos have invaded the whole world, creating new conflicts and new battlefields.
With flying carpets.
With flying carpets. the world that was already at war has to create new alliances and new strategies to face, obviously, threats that are brand new. So that's where we stand right now.
That's pretty awesome. When you referred to the Vril as the guardians of the galaxy, that pretty much sold it. I guess I need to get Vril when they come out.
Yes. Honestly, the Vril are so the game of Dust is called Diesel Punk, from the design and the source of energies that are used and these kind of things. With a lot of walkers and these kind of things, the Vril are genuinely Atom Punk. So they are going to be a little bit further down the line of sci-fi, basically. But it's going to be very interesting to see them out. The few designs that we have seen from Paolo are amazing. So
his inspiration book.
Yeah.
Nice. I guess my tag on for the Dust universe is that one of the neatest things that a new player can do is to look at the split on the map of where the current alliances are, because unlike I feel like in historical World War II, we had a lot of different nations and a lot of kind of craziness going on. It's a lot more unified. The Axis bloc is pretty big. You also have the SSU, which is the confederation between Russia, the Chinese, a lot of those more, I guess, Eastern European nations. You have the Allies, which is almost all of North America and possibly part of the Central as well.
Yes.
Coming over into the more Western of the European nations. Even Africa is kind of just split up amongst all the other big blocks. You have a very small coalition of the Imperial Japanese Navy. Correct? Or Imperial Japanese Nation?
Uh-huh.
No, it is the Navy. Okay.
Navy, yeah.
Cool. And then you have some mercenaries that seem to be primarily based in South America?
Yes. The neutral nation organization is actually three countries, basically, right now. And they are mainly based in South America.
Nice. And then you do also have the mythos, which seem to be primarily centralized in the sea. Which is where they're coming from. But they seem to be a little bit almost more universal.
So what's going to happen with the mythos is that they are absolutely everywhere. So if you look really in the detail of the map from Paradise Lost, you will see a lot of little purple dots everywhere because this is genuinely where they popped up and decided to attack. So you will see that, for example, big cities like Washington, Zverograd, Moscow, these kind of things have been completely razed by the cultists. because they suddenly either a huge monster popped out of the dirt and decided to shriek and destroy the brain of everyone in 3 square miles or this kind of thing. So it's really, they are really everywhere, and you have a lot of small stories in the book that allow you to discover what they did and where, and it's pretty funny. So there's one of my favorite novellas in it that explains the invasion of a Blutkreuz secret base in the undergrounds of Germany by the cultists, and how they have been repelled extremely violently by a contingent of zombies that were just parked there for later. So pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah, I think that really sums up the universe very well, and it is a very interesting universe. There's also just a lot of depth to it, where because these, like, the comics and the novellas and the stories in the book all exist, it's a pretty well fleshed out universe that just more information keeps coming on.
Yeah. We have another novel that is supposed to be published this year or maybe next year. But when I say this year, it's 2021 for me. Sorry, I'm already ahead because we work on the schedule, obviously, several months ahead. But 2021, we're supposed to have a novel that is going to be released, written by Chris Lights, that has actually a lot to do with Atlantis. But we also have several novellas that are going to be published either through our newsletter or in the books later. So yeah, the universe is constantly moving and being built by Olivier and other writers, so it's pretty cool.
Okay. Moving on to the gameplay itself. So Dust is interesting in that, like we've mentioned, it can be played on a grid or with standard measurements. It seems like in the States, the grid is definitely a little bit more of a popular format, while when we see kind of posts coming in from across the seas, that they seem to enjoy more of the freeform gridless play. Either or, it's an interesting gameplay experience both ways.
Yeah, it's really mainly grid everywhere, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I would say a solid 92.8%. But yeah, you can really play it the way you want. That has always been the will of Paolo, that basically you play this game at the size you want, the time you want, and the way you want, because that's your game and you do what you want with it. So that's really that. I have a personal preference for grid because it's faster, easier. And I already have other games that play on tabletop so I don't need another one on tabletop. Plus, it doesn't prevent you from playing 3D terrain and this kind of thing. So,
hi, listeners. This is Owen. We lost some of the audio for this episode due to a software crash. The portion that's missing from the episode discusses the mechanics of Dust. Specifically, the Dust uses a modified D6, which is really more like a modified D3, to determine success and failure. Rather than having a number on each face of the dice, though, there's a symbol, and that symbol determines whether or not an action or a reaction to an action is successful. Additionally, Dust, most commonly in the US, uses a grid system. Anyone that's played a board game is going to be familiar with that. Rather than try to recreate that conversation and all the nuances within, I'm simply going to put a link to the rules of Dust in the show notes. It's a very simple system to be able to pick up and play, so if you're interested in hearing more, please check that out. What's missing also is the transition from that section of the episode to the next section, specifically reasons why someone might like Dust. I'm going to stop here and let the guest pick it up from here.
So yeah, the main asset of Dust, definitely, from the moment you open the box to the moment you're going to start playing, the miniatures are ready to play, which means that they are already put together in the box. They are in a colored plastic that differs depending on the faction. So if you play IGN, it's going to be a little yellow. If you play Allies, it's going to be green. If you play Axis, it's going to be gray. So you open the box, you play right away on the table. Even if you don't paint them, or if you want to paint them later, you can play right away anyway. It happened multiple times in events that we have organized in shops where we also have demos. We do the demo to someone, and then they're like, oh, I like this game. Next time I will play. And we just tell them, no, you can play right now. Just grab a starter set and open it, and it's done. And so that's really a huge asset for everyone. It's really a simple game to grasp because the dice are super easy to read. because the grid is super easy to use, because really everything is right there right now. You can really play the game. When we do a demo, it lasts 15 minutes. At the end of the demo, at the end of the first round of the demo, people are autonomous. They can genuinely handle themselves without our help anymore. So it's really, really easy. I think we have among the best miniatures in the market. Paolo always says that there's a competitor that does better, but I disagree. so there's that. Really, it's a fun game. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be fast-paced. It's extremely lethal. There's no grind to the game. You can play as little as 5 miniatures, and you can play as much as 80 miniatures on a table, and it's still balanced. So it's really a fun game, and it's meant to be fun. It's a game that has been created by Paolo and Olivier because they wanted a game that they could play on the kitchen table at the end of a very hard day of work. So they wanted something that was easy to grasp and that it still had some depth when they were a little bit less tired, and they wanted something to help them think. So I think that does that pretty well.
I would definitely agree with that.
I think the other thing about the starter boxes that makes them very cool too is that both the starter boxes and the army boxes come with mats, so players don't have to worry about buying mats to get started, and they also come with dice as well. So every single thing that a new person wanting to get into the game is right in that box itself. And even expanding on mats, you just pick up the army box to go with your starter box, and now you have two mats to expand your game to more of a kind of full-size 100-point scenario.
So watch out here. All the starter sets have dice and mats. The army boxes don't have the mats.
Oh,
Only the Cthulhu one has the dice for a funny internal reason. But really, the army boxes are just here to help you expand your army at a discount, basically, because you always have one unit that is free in the box.
Very cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but all the starter sets have a mat, so you buy one starter set each with your friend, and you set them up on the table right away. You can play because you have a full table, and this is the same size table that you're going to use even for bigger games later. So that's really the main asset of the starter sets. You really need a starter set to start, and then you can branch out to army boxes to expand your army very fast with the best sellers. Meaning the units that are really the most useful for you right away. And then you can buy the HQ box that has between 3 and 5 characters and a command squad, so that you really create a huge variation of gameplay suddenly just by switching heroes or by putting the command squad in your list. That's really your 3 main purchases.
I think the other thing, too, that we haven't really hit on yet is that when it comes down to reasons why people might really enjoy Dust, is really going about the community, where both the online community and the in-person community for the game is incredibly positive and supportive. Especially, I think every single Patriot I've met, which is the Dust version of a press ganger, has been just amazing, where they are very invested in the community having fun over anything else. And there's a lot more focus on fun and casual kind of scenarios, Dust Day events, rather than like these hardcore tournament, cut your throat kind of competitive issues, which is very refreshing. It's a lot of fun. I think overall, too, the same's reflected online, where online it's a very welcoming community, and just I've seen more kind of trolls or people kicked out for saying terrible things or kind of tormenting or trying to torment new players than in any other community where sometimes that behavior is allowed, you know?
Well, that is really, on that I would let Alicia probably discuss it, because she really set up the policy that we have regarding community management. So
I went with Greg before I was in this to some tournaments for other competitive games. And I saw some of the most piss poor behavior I've ever seen in my life from fully grown adults. And I just kind of thought to myself, it doesn't make me want to play your game at all. And it doesn't feel welcoming for me at all. And the fact is that it doesn't look relaxing for you. So I tried to remove the toxic behavior that I saw to make a more cohesive environment for everyone to get something out of being together. And I think that there should be a zero tolerance policy for any kind of behavior like that. And so I think it's really important that people understand that if you don't nurture the newbie in your community, you won't have anyone to play with in the future because your community will die off. And if you can't sometimes have a game where you're more in a teaching mode against your opponent and using that opportunity to build their skill level so that you have a more feisty game is what you're looking for. There's just no point to this. Your hobby shouldn't be more stressful than your job. And I just really think that, you know, there was a moment where Greg was teaching me Dust and my daughter came up who was probably what, 10 at the time?
Yeah, she was.
And she goes, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm playing this game." She's like, "Well, can I play?" And I'm like, "No, it's a war game. You wouldn't like it." Like, what a stupid thing for me to say. Like, but it was my first instinct to say, "It's a war game. You wouldn't like it," to my daughter. And I realized that I, too, was part of that toxic community. And I vowed to change. So I think that children should be able to play this game against adults. And it should be able to be played in, you know, somewhat of a teaching manner and then move on to something more intriguing. But and in our community online, it's just there's no reason for anyone to be putting down any other players and everybody's things are nice. And it's not one of those things where, hey, everybody should get a trophy. You know, we're all winners here. It's just that maybe the ultimate goal of this hobby is not whether or not you won that game, because for every winner, there has to be a loser. But was it fun? When you step back and you look at that past hour or 2 hours, did you have fun playing this game? And if you didn't, then there's a problem with the game and with you. That's just basically it. As I said before, I don't have a lot of experience in the gaming community, but because of that, I can look at what's happening as an outsider looking in and see the flaws and the problems and what areas maybe we could change so that everybody focuses on the moment we're having together instead of, yay, I won this virtual thing that doesn't matter really anyway. So that's basically it. It's long and drawn out, but I'm a mom and, you know, I hear arguing all the time. And I'm like, maybe there's a different way to do this. So we cut the word tournament from our vocabulary and we made game days and we started having food yes. at events so that, you know, maybe for these long-term things where everybody gets together to play all day long, nobody has to stress about where are they going to find some drive-through to eat some crappy food so that I can survive the rest of this day. But just making it be more of a party instead of just a game. And then everybody has fun. Everybody talks about it for years to come. And everybody wants to come do it again as soon as you do it. And that's the kind of community that I wanted to build for Dust. Is just, you know, we just want to get together and hang. And it's not, I want to come to this event and I want to be the winner of the entire thing. Because that means nothing. So, I mean, really, it means nothing. It's all about your friends. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I could ramble for hours and I'm going to stop because I'm just in that mood.
No, but there is a culture, basically, of the miniature gaming, but of the gaming in general that is very competitive. And again, Dust is a competitive game. You will play against one player or against three players. It doesn't matter. You have a scenario, you want to win. So it's still a competitive game. But at the same time, since you can bring your best game at the table without bringing all the toxic behavior that goes with it, you can win. That doesn't mean that the other one in front of you has lost. If they had fun, if they learned something new, If you laughed, if you joked, if you created moments that you will remember because they were good. I mean, last week I was playing at my gaming club, and I was playing against a guy, and I'm like, I'm going to steamroll his list because really on the paper, I cannot lose. And then everything went wrong. Everything. Like every single dice that I was rolling was a failure. Every single dice that he was rolling was a success.
I don't think you were making action sounds.
I was, but at the point, the gods of dice had decided that I was a little bit too sure of myself, and they wanted to punish me and remind me that in the laws of great numbers, I'm weak and nothing. So really, at the point, the poor guy was apologizing, and I was like, are you kidding me? I'm having a blast. And genuinely, I'm getting blasted off the table. But it was super fun. And at the end of the game, he was relaxed. He was happy because he had won, and he deserved it because really the victory was good. He made the right moves at the right moment, and everything was fine. We had a great game. I got crushed out of the table, and I was happy. And this is really the kind of moment that we want to recreate with this game, is that even if you lose, you're not losing. No one loses, basically. Not because, again, it's not about giving medals to everyone, you know, and everyone is a victor. But it's because the point of the game, let's say, the goal of the game is to win. The point of the game is to have fun.
So if you're not worried about winning, sometimes people will bring in the craziest armies that I've ever seen. Just stupid lists. And that's the fun stuff. That's, you know, I made a list of completely, you know, dogs. You know, or this or that. And it's like, that's the kind of variety you want to see. You don't want to see this, what do you call it?
The meta.
Yeah.
I hate
where,
that.
You know, and everybody's like, well, this one sucks because it doesn't do this, this, and that. And it's like, yeah, but the figure's cool. So,
yeah, I think it does say a lot that in all the time I've kind of spent in the Dust community, I have only seen one player post up trying to rank models or try and set up like kind of like a net list of what is the army to take in this faction, yes. Especially with a community as large as the Dust community is.
Yeah, people are really, really openly trying to avoid that in our community, and it's really nice. You have units that you're going to be familiar with and that you're going to use easier and that are obviously that seem obviously more powerful because they really correspond to your game style. And then you have this guy that comes with this list that doesn't make sense. Monkey, that we mentioned earlier, is a specialist of that. He has these crazy lists that don't make sense, are not optimized or anything, don't use the faction bonus or anything. And at the end of the game, he made you sweat because he's good. He knows the game, he knows the rules, and he knows how to get to the objective. And that really makes some very interesting games, even for power gamers. And that's really nice. When we did the Dusty Dinner last year, I was playing actually with one of our Patriots, and we had this table where you could play in co-op game against an artificial intelligence, basically. And they decided that they would fight this thing until they win. And they basically sat at a table, thought about the ultimate army list that they could do against this scenario, just to break it, to make sure that it was functioning, basically. And they did it, they won, and they were super proud. But they were also very happy because they really played what they wanted to play on the table. And that's really the spirit of the game.
His dog's army, he painted the figures in different types of dogs. So he has Dalmatians and what was it?
Dobermans.
Yeah, and then he's going to have Blue's Clues.
Yes.
Nice.
And that's awesome.
It's all about having fun, always.
Yeah, so with all of those like great reasons as to why someone would like to get into Dust, for the couple people whom this might not be the game for them, Owen will kind of explain the reasons why.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add also as kind of a transition, when I think about reasons someone may not like the game, I think about, you know, based on my own self, reasons why I can think of people wouldn't like, but I also try to do some online research. So in researching Dust and reasons why people don't like it, I went to a couple different forums and was looking for criticism. And the only criticism I could find was on a popular online board game community where they were complaining that they couldn't complain more on your Facebook group, which I think speaks to the quality of the community.
I'm okay with that.
Well, yeah. It's really funny because we don't really monitor it. Unless it gets majorly out of control, it's the members themselves who have decided that they just don't want to hear it anymore. I mean, really, it was amazing the transformation that happened. At first, you know, because Greg and I were really stepping into like the fire because it was right after issues we won't go in, but we started this up and people were just grabbing like left and right. And when Greg would try to stop them, they would just start attacking him. And so we started caking people. And by caking people, we would take a picture of a slice of cake and we would just send it to them, like on the comment, like cake, you know, like have this cake. And it just caught on. And then there were many months of where people were just getting caked all the time until finally they just stopped.
Every time someone was ranting, it was not even us posting the cakes anymore. It was the members of the page.
It was just a funny thing to know, okay, this person's just getting a little bit too much needing a Snickers and here's a piece of cake. So,
nice.
And then people just decided that they didn't want to hear it anymore and managed it for us. And that was really nice because that let us know that there was something worth fighting for.
That's awesome.
I genuinely believe that people are good, but people are stressed. People have pressure everywhere. And sometimes it overflows to their hobby or to something, especially when this hobby has been disappointing for whatever reason. It's very hard for some people to tell themselves, okay, I used to love this game. I don't love it anymore. I need to drop it. You have spent time, effort, money, a lot of money in it. It's really complicated to tell yourself, you know what? It was good while it lasted, and now I have to move on. So sometimes they come and they are really expressing distress. And it's very important to understand that, but also to make them understand that they are just in distress right now because they are facing a decision that they don't want to make. So sometimes it happens that, yeah, we tell a guy, you know what, time out, go sit in a corner, think about it. This game is not for everyone. It's a niche game with a niche universe. So we understand that some people will not like it, but it's okay. It's fine. You can find another game. There are a plethora of games, dead or alive, that you can like. Please, I mean, don't ruin yourself and don't ruin the pleasure for others. So, yeah, it's people can understand that and they really adopted this philosophy on our group. So now we really rarely have to moderate anything. So it's nice. It's really, really nice. We have
That's
a good
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to reasons why people may not like Dust. And I'll admit here, I'm stretching on at least two of these. So one reason I have seen people say, I don't know if that's for me, is some people just don't like bespoke dice. So use a custom type of dice for Dust. Some people just, they see that in a game and that is just a line they don't want to cross. Okay, I don't really know what to say to that, but I've heard that communicated, so be it. It is more common to play on the grid rather than using measurements in the States. I've heard some people see demos of it and say, I just don't want to do a grid. That's really more a board game. The fact that you have the option here, if you really want to play with real measurements, to me makes this kind of a non-issue. But again, it's something I've heard people say when I've offered demos and they've declined. Lastly, I would say, and this is something true for most historicals or historical adjacent games, there can be reasons why people wouldn't want to reenact something that really happened in real life. Now, to be clear, Cthulhu hasn't come out of the sea. We don't have mechs walking around in 1940s.
Again, I also understand why some people would not even want to come near it. Because, again, it is a questionable time period, and it's not that long ago. And there's still a lot of hurt over it.
So, I mean, I think that's a decision that every potential player needs to make for themselves. But if it is something that you think would be a turnoff for you, I think everyone fully understands. So Alicia and Greg, you know, we've talked a lot about Dust. What are some of your favorite Dust memories?
Hmm. Oh, the first year when we were at a convention for retailers only, where Greg was manning the fort trying to explain to retailers why they should invest in Dust. And it was just amazing to watch him, you know, and how passionate he was about the game. And it's I always love to watch my husband talk about it. He has a better way with words than I do. But as a generic best moments, as much as I hate conventions because they're so exhausting, because we are not that company that we're like elitists and we are never on the booth because we're doing drinks with other people and doing that. We are on the booth all the time with the people that are helping us. And it's that whole family that we build, where we got to a point where we actually don't even do things separately after the show. We all go back to the house that we rent or wherever we're staying, and we all hang out together. And it's just having that kind of environment on the booth and the fun that we have on the booth and the horsing around that we do on the booth, because, you know, we try to make it fun for them too. And yes, we're there to sell a product, but it's not all about selling the product. It's about having fun selling the product also. So I really miss our convention family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. As much as I can say I'm happy to be home, I do miss those moments. And there's times where we just wander the cities together, you know. Usually I'm not there, but Greg gets to do it. And then I hear about all the fun they had as they were sightseeing in Philadelphia. And I'm just like, man, I've never seen anything yet. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to say the same thing. It's just...
Well, I have so many good memories. I mean, it goes from this kid that is completely lost in his dreams in front of the glass case, making action noises because he's genuinely telling the story that is happening in the glass case.
Yeah, the little kid that was at the demo table, that he was doing his own demo. He did, and when we asked him if he wanted to play the game, he's like, no. And he was actually just there playing with the models like they were action figures and telling a story to himself. And it was amazing.
Yeah. It is having a late dinner with my demo guys after a day of tearing down the booth, which is the absolute hell, because you have like 4 hours to tear down a booth that you spent 2 days to set up. Okay, so it's ridiculously complicated and hard, and everyone is tired. I get super cranky because really I at a point I'm...
It starts 2 weeks before the convention.
It's very complicated, and you have these guys that soldier on and just do the job. And then we're just at the house together and we're tired. Our feet are bleeding. I mean, it's really hell, genuinely hell to do a convention. But then we're just happy and we have these memories. And some of these guys are my friends since I was working for Rackham. So I've known them since 2005, 2006. So we're like old friends now, and they're still laughing because they know the drill and they know the things.
They know that Greg's going to get cranky.
Yeah, it's
a joke now.
It's going to... Yes, it is. But no, I have so many good memories with that it's... I mean, it's pretty fantastic. So, but yeah, seeing the smile on the face of players when you do a demo and they're suddenly having a lot of fun. At first, they don't look at you because they're focused on the miniatures and the game and the cards. They're trying to assimilate everything, or they look at you and they're completely lost. And then you play one round where you explain everything, and suddenly they go, "Oh!" And they start to smile, they start to laugh, they start to joke. And that works. And you see
them come back and they've got their friends with them and they're doing the demo for their friends.
Exactly. And it's genuinely that. It's like, can we sit for a demo? Yeah. And I'm like, you already played today. And the guy goes, yeah, yeah, I was there for a demo and I'm showing it to my friend. I'm like, okay, cool. So do the demo. And at first they look at you like, but I don't know how to do it. I'm like, you know how to play the game? Yeah. You know your friend? Yeah. Talk to him. And they go, oh, okay, cool. And suddenly they do the demo and they discover that it lasts 15 minutes like we do. I'm just here to correct stuff when it's wrong or to explain something if they forgot it. And boom, it rolls. And That is very, very nice to just see that. It's seeing the same faces coming back from one convention to another, remembering you.
And sometimes they just come to talk.
Yeah, they just come to chit chat, or sometimes they grab another box, which is nice also. I like money. But, but yeah, it's really that. So, I mean, we are lucky enough that we work in an industry that basically is selling happiness and relief. So just enjoying that is pretty cool. It's a lot of good memories.
Awesome. Chris, how about you?
I'll try to condense mine as much as possible because it is a little bit of a story, but essentially it was 2019 when I had started to get into Dust. I could easily blame both Adam Shagan and Ray Rappaport for it. So I got my models, you know, I got set up in Steelguard because just the fluff of the army, the look of the army really appealed to me. And I'd also connected with Greg and Alicia about making tokens for Dust through Muse. So I was really excited to make these tokens. And unfortunately, the time period between when the tokens were like getting made to when I could show them to Greg and Alicia was the same time period as Muse was working on a few other games releases at the same time. So it was like just this like real big rush to get everything done and get it to me by the time that Greg and Alicia came to New Jersey for a Dust Days. And in the same time, I also had to paint all of my models to play the game. And in the course of doing those things, I actually didn't play a single game of Dust before the Dust Days.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, the night before I was finishing painting my models and peeling tokens off of the backing to bag them and sort them properly. So I drove down with like 4 hours of sleep and no breakfast to Dust Days. And I basically went in with the idea of I'm going to lose 3 games, but I'm going to learn how to play the game and I'll have a good time doing it. And that's not quite what happened.
Nope.
No, I and each time, like Greg has mentioned, you know, like you come up against things, you're not really sure how they work, and it's just like, oh man, like, okay, I'm gonna lose this, but like it'll be cool. Like my first game was against a almost all Walker list, that was an Axis list, and managed to kind of like eke out a win on Scenario and and the super soldier for the Russians kind of breaking walkers with his hands. My second game was against IJN, where I couldn't contest objectives as long as there were ninja units on top of them. I also couldn't shoot the ninja units that were all camouflaged. This is probably why I have an IJN army now, thanks to Dave. But still managed to kind of pull out a win there. With some like interesting mechanics that Adam had kind of taught me about, like the command squad actions, so I could reactivate certain models that were in range and I wouldn't have to worry about moving and then taking shots that just wouldn't make much of a difference. And then the third round I played against Art Washburn, who is a phenomenal player, and the scenario itself actually lended itself to a more balanced list because it used objectives that were Cuisinet huts, which could only be occupied by troops. They couldn't be occupied by walkers. And Art had played a heavier walker list. So by removing his troops, it allowed me to score a little bit better, even though in like kind of a face-to-face match, his army might have stomped all over mine. So I came out winning all 3 games, which was completely unexpected, and also got best painted, which I was very surprised about because a lot of the paint jobs at that time that I had seen for the Dust Armies had been more of kind of like a historical style of paint job. And I had went a little crazy and color shift painted all of my Steelguard. So they're all this like switch from crazy blue metallic to crazy blue pink on the same models. And I was like, this looks fun for me, but I don't know if this is going to bother anyone. And people really loved it and enjoyed it, which kind of cemented that it was not that historical mindset and the, you painted your officer's fatigues the wrong shade of khaki. and then to kind of cap the whole thing off where, Greg and Alicia mentioned, everybody's happy. Everyone's having a good time, like win or lose. Greg and Adam start throwing Dust gifts randomly across the room, kind of like weird miniature Santa Claus time. And it, like, whether you won or lost, people were walking away with premium already painted models. They were walking away with these like just great things that they might not have been able to buy in their local store. And it was totally random. It was just, hey, come out, play these games, have a good time. And you're probably going to walk away with some great memories and some great kind of fun parts. And yeah, and in addition, the tokens actually went over really well.
Yes.
Players, so lovely.
Players were a big fan of them, which was great because this was my first real project for a game company that wasn't my custom work for things or side work for things. It was a wonderful time. It gave a great look into the community itself. I had fun the entire time, despite, being tragically short on sleep. it was great. Owen, I know you've played some Dust. Do you have any favorite memories?
Went to a local convention to me at the time, which was Captain Con. And much like Chris was saying, I kind of expected to get my teeth kicked in because I'd played a couple of demo-sized games. I didn't really know what I was doing and ended up doing okay. I think I got third place, and really at the end of the day, placement doesn't matter. I had three great games with great people on a really, I would say, more narrative focused tournament than what I have been used to with something like War Machine, where it was a show up and try to kick the other guy's teeth in as hard as you can. It was a much more relaxed, at points I was getting some really good advice from both Adam, who ran the event, and just my opponents, and gave that back too. Yeah, there were people there with their kids, let their kids play, and tried to set up, okay, here's what you can do with your Cthulhu monster against mine, or you can do this. And it became more of a teaching thing than a rigorous, I'm trying to win, I got to get this, got to get that. And to my great surprise at the end, it was like, okay, cool, we're going to have everyone that played come up and take a box. First comes, first serve. It was a very different experience than anything else I'd ever seen in minis games. And it definitely encouraged me to play a lot more. So yeah, I think that was probably my favorite Dust moment I've had thus far. And it's part of the reason I was excited to have Greg and Alicia on today to talk about the game.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, Greg and Alicia, do you guys have a favorite Dust model in the line?
Okay, gameplay-wise, the avatar of Nyarlathotep. Mm-hmm. Miniature-wise, I will have to say Gregor.
I wonder why.
Yeah. It is a funny story how he became Gregor, but it's also a very, very good memory for me. And it was during our first trip to Hong Kong to visit the factory and the offices of the studio. So it was 2 years ago. And the miniature was about to be released, but we didn't know how to name it. And we tossed our ideas around. And finally, Paolo said jokingly, you look like him, so it's going to be called Gregor.
You look at him when you're mad.
Yeah, you look at him when you're mad. Yeah, true. So yeah, it's it became that, and I'm really happy with that. I really like the miniature. Gameplay wise, it's a fun miniature to play, but really the style, and everything is really something that I'm happy with. So, what about you, Alicia?
Well, the first model that I had to have was Red Ace. The paint job on the chopper was like the thing that I had to have, the coloration. It was the premium model, obviously. But I would have to say now, if I had to pick my favorite models, it would be the Japanese, the IGN. Just because I'm an artist by trade, so the proportions are perfect, and I just enjoy how realistic they look. So it would be the ninjas.
Yeah, the ninjas are, I mean, They are magnificent miniatures.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But I just really like where the game has gone in the past couple years with the fantasy. I love the, you know, the guy in the fez on the flying carpet. You know, I love the bodyguard with the saber-toothed tiger. You know, it's just the priestess and, you know, all that stuff. And I personally, when I'm playing with Greg, I play the PLA. I love the little straw hats. I actually wear one of those straw hats when I garden in the summertime. So it's kind of my thing. So I just, and I love that on the back of the walker that it has a straw hat just hanging there for the pilot when they hop out, that they can put their little hat on to protect them from the sun. So it's all those little details, just like that guy on the Facebook group that does the immense details when he's modeling.
The mercenary walkers. It's magnificent.
If I had money, I would pay him to build me an army.
I would too.
I mean, if anybody could just top what Paolo already did, that was just amazing. So I really enjoy. It's like the. Do you guys remember the Mercer Meyer books with the little monster? And there used to be, you'd read the story, and the story was, of course, the subject of what you were doing. But on each page, the artist had put little monsters, and you had to find them as you were reading. So each time you'd flip a page, there would be a little white monster hidden somewhere in the page, and you would look for them. And that's kind of like what I get when I see that. You know, when he builds all that stuff, there's just so much to look at.
What about you guys?
That's a really tough one. I mean, like you guys said, the line itself is really awesome. I'm actually just going to say Steel Guard as a whole. War Machine is really like my first real war game, and I always wanted Men of War to work, and they never really did. So Steel Guard on the table function like the Man of War army always should have in War Machine, which made me really happy. Plus, I really love the concept behind the models of, you know, it's like, well, you know, you might have lost your leg, you might have had your spine broken, but, you know, we're going to make use of you. Like, you're still going to be useful in this army. We're just going to make you better. Like, here's this big steel suit, go off. The models themselves look really cool. There's a lot of little details on them, which, you know, when I was speed painting them to get them done was a bit of a difficult situation. But now that, you know, I have them, it makes the model itself just look really cool. A lot of them have like packed up like bedding rolls on their back, or cabling going from some of their weapons to the backpack. You know, like the engineer in the command squad has his different tools and a spotlight. There's a lot of stuff going on the models. And they also have just these great curved surfaces, which work phenomenally for the turbo shift paint. So I really like the whole Steel Guard line as a whole, which is probably why I have about like 350 points worth of them. What about you, Owen?
I mean, I think I already mentioned, I think Nadir, the cultist on a flying carpet wearing a fez, definitely remains one of my favorite. I've got really basic taste in miniatures, though. So I would say even Totenmeister, which is an older sculpt. He's the leader of the zombies for the Axis forces. He's a good understated sculpt, but I think he says a lot in how he's posed, and just speaks to the quality of, you know, simple but well-proportioned models that Paolo's been able to create.
Yeah. So legitimately, the first person who converts Nadir into Ray Rappaport, I'm going to give like a Mythos token set to, because I feel like it's right there and it's set to go. And that would just make me so happy.
that would be great, yeah. Funny story, actually one of our, Brian Gomori, one of our Patriots, did that last PAX, but on a regular cultist for Ray. So he converted a small cultist and made it as Ray and give it to Ray. So yeah, nice. It's pretty cool.
Wonderful.
But yeah, definitely the Nadia deserves to be Ray.
No doubt. So, Greg and Alicia, we ask all the guests we have on here three simple questions. So we're going to ask you those now. What are your favorite Dead War games?
That's funny because I thought I would have the answer right away. Yeah, actually, I do have the answer right away. It's 8043 for me.
Right on.
It's, I was working at Rackham when it was created, when it was sold. It was my favorite game ever until Dust. I think that Dust now is superior because it has the grid, basically. But really, AT43 was magnificent in so many ways. It was fun. It was, the scenarios were diverse. The armies were bonkers, and it was really a game that I loved a lot. So I was very, very sad when it disappeared. Funny enough, it's super hard to get, even though we sold a bazillion of them, but the secondhand market is still very high. So,
right on.
What about you?
I honestly have never been drawn to a war game before Dust.
Yeah.
And I think that Dust will be the last war game that I will ever play. Just because there was nothing really in it for me. I mean, what was my representation, you know? And I think that because of the changes that have been made with Dust, it's the only one so far that really would be something that I would be interested in.
We'll see. Maybe, I mean, we never know how the industry is going to evolve. At a point, it has to evolve. So
I would like it to.
Yeah. We'll see. What about you guys?
Well, so I think this whole podcast probably speaks to some of our favorites. So we're going to keep this focused on you guys.
Okay, good.
are there any dead war games you think people should know more about?
There are a few. It's a little bit unfair to call it dead because I know that there's a publisher that is reviving it a little bit. But Carnivale was a war game that was very interesting in his first incarnation. Because it's a game that basically you play in Venice in the 18th century. There's a little bit of Cthulhu element to it, but basically I think a lot of dead war games are, for me, that are interesting are Nave always liked. And they always had interesting mechanisms to compensate the fact that basically for 3 hours you were moving one or two miniatures over a table that was way too big for that. But I always like this kind of mechanisms. But yeah, that's pretty much all.
Cool.
All right. So other than Dust, which obviously the whole episode is a shout out to, is there anything that you'd kind of like to mention or shout out on the podcast?
Wear a mask.
Yes.
I'd like to leave my home at some point.
Yeah,
it's really a matter of, even if you make it a political statement, which again shouldn't be, but if you make it a political statement, remember that some people have to deprive themselves of a normal life because you refuse to wear it, and out of generosity, just because you think about others, just wear your mask and on the nose, not right under it.
I work in dental. And we temp check every patient that comes in, but we all know that temperatures don't read whether you're sick or not. And so there have been multiple instances where I have actually worked on COVID positive patients, and in dentistry, there is an aerosol spray. And if you look at my face shield, you'll see that I'm completely covered in blood and saliva from the patients.
But that's because they didn't obey.
But it really is a serious thing. And you think that it's just about you, but it's not, because people like me who can't get this are facing it every single day, and it's exhausting. And I don't talk about it on my Facebook page much because I don't want my job to be upset, but it really is a problem. Daily, we have someone come in who has symptoms that maybe shouldn't be there, but because they just don't think that this is serious enough to truthfully fill out the forms on whether or not they should be seen today. And there is real no way for us to filter out those who are infectious and those who are not. And it's to the point where I'm basically the only person left at my office doing my job, because I wear a PAPR, I'm sealed in, but this is some really serious stuff. And not everyone is just going to be able to just fight it off in 2 weeks, and you can get it again. And it's,
just wear a mask.
As a company, we're kind of downplaying, you know, the go out to your game club and play, because I really can, in good faith, ask you to do that. And if that means that our company dies because people aren't playing our game or buying our models, I would rather see you all alive than have a company next year. Because it's not everything.
Yeah, and I think that's really the ideal is, you know, hopefully people stay inside now, play their games online, whether it's Tabletop Simulator or
trying to find ways. We post scenarios for you to play online with other, or show you how to do it. We've really tried to support that, to put these ideas on our Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And I think that in all areas of the gaming area, you know, there's got to be some other ways. I mean, most of these people playing these games are highly intelligent. I mean, the amount of rules that you people memorize to play these games tells me that you are highly intelligent people. So I know that you can find safe ways to do it.
I know you guys also mentioned the Toledo Game Room as your local friendly game store. So we'll definitely put their name out in the show notes so people can find them, support them, and enjoy some games.
Yeah, our two main shops in the area are going to be the Toledo Game Room in Toledo that are doing an amazing job, and also Game Chefs, that is also pushing the game very nicely, doing smaller conventions like, you know, in colleges or these kind of things. And they are they are all amazing people. So maybe the Game Room or Game Chefs, they are both really, really, really nice people that are really working for the community. So.
But it makes me happy when I see people posting pictures where they're playing and they're at least wearing masks.
Yeah.
That's all I can ask for.
Cool. Well, I think that about wraps it up. I think we actually made good on our estimate of an hour, first time in a little bit, so I'll take it. Apologies to listeners if there's any weird cuts in here. We had some issues with our software we used to record this, so fingers crossed this ends up sounding decent to all the folks out there. Just some note keeping on the podcast. I just want to mention that we're on most podcasting platforms now. By the time this goes up, we should be on Apple Podcasts. So if you're looking to download us on your phone, that should be an easy way for you to get access to that. If you like what you hear, please check out our Facebook group. We're at the Dead War Gamer Society at Facebook. And for all those people listening to this one, if you made it this far, please check out the Dust USA and Dust groups on Facebook as well. Check them on Instagram. They have lots of goodies there for new releases. And if you have a few extra bucks and want to support Greg and Alicia, I'm sure that they would appreciate it if you bought at your LGS. But if you don't have that at your LGS, DustUSA.com, they have a shop on there. And I think Greg and Alicia can hook you up with the product you're looking for.
Yes, but always buy at your LGS first. Support your LGS, especially with Christmas coming. Thank you very much for having us. It was really, really, really nice, and it was a lot of fun.
Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.
Luckily enough, I don't have to mix this, so.
Thanks, buddy.